doing? Thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and I have a new host in studio today, folks. Fresh off his world tour, the one and the only Big Fizzy.
That's right, folks. I'm here in studio. I'm here. I've got my LaCroix. What flavor is this one? Lemon?
Lemon.
I got my LaCroix. Yeah, in fact, I've been drinking so much sparkling water that the people in town have given me a new nickname. I'm no longer Philio or Philly. I'm known as Big Fizzy.
A.K.A. Kylomite.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So I'm happy with the new name. I'm glad that people are, because they're like, everywhere they see me, I'm drinking sparkling water, baby.
What's up, Big Fizzy?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
for all of you that aren't elitist, we covered this on the last Elite show. And so now that's Kyle's new name is going to be Big Fizzy from this point forward.
That's right.
So Big Fizzy, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
How was your Easter little shindig over at the family house?
It was good. You know, good eats, that's for sure. Good company. It was a little long for me. I was getting tired. I think I'm getting to that age where, like, after like 4 hours, I'm like, I'm ready to go home.
It's like an old man. You're ready to get back home.
Yeah, I have no reason to come home. My father's the exact same way. Like, in an hour, he's ready to go home. I'm like, what are you rushing back to? You're retired.
Yeah.
You don't do anything besides watch Predator. Over and over.
Don't be hating on that.
But
why were you mad? You were trying to get home and watch Predator?
No, I didn't even have a reason. But I was looking in the sky because Tiangong 1 is no more.
Yep.
Are you aware
of that? It's gonna fall. Yeah,
yep,
I saw that.
It already did. It just happened like last night.
Mm.
China's, if you're not aware what we're talking about, China's got this prototype space station that fell back to Earth, and its name is Tiangong 1, which means Heavenly Palace 1, and it met a fiery explosion on Earth's atmosphere earlier. Between April 1st and April 2nd, depending on where you were.
Yeah.
But I think it crashed over the South Pacific somewhere. But what's crazy is this, they were testing it because China wants to, they want to have a full-time space satellite, space station, I'm sorry, just like we do. And they've been trying, you know, they're trying different technologies mm-hmm. out. Now, it's not clear, based on the articles that I've read, why exactly the thing was falling back to Earth, but they had knew at some point they had lost transmission with it or whatever the controls they used to send to it. They'd lost, something had gone wrong. And they knew it was falling back to Earth. I remember even like 6 months ago, I had talked about it in the news that they knew this thing was going to fall. And don't not to worry, it's going to fall over the South Pacific somewhere. But if you, the last article I read, they say there are pieces. Now, when it came down, it was about the size of a school bus, they said. And there was a couple pieces that actually survived the burn up and hit. And they don't believe it hurt anybody. But they said if you happen to be in an area and you did find a piece of this thing, don't pick it up.
Really?
It's highly toxic.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact molecules, the materials that were in it that made it so dangerous, but they say if you found a piece of this thing, just leave it alone. So if you're in your backyard, I don't know, picking flowers, and you see a smoking piece of metal debris land in your yard, move away, folks.
Yeah.
Call the authorities. Now, what I don't understand is they talk about it falling in the South Pacific. I'm like, well, then why are they issuing a warning to people outside of the South Pacific? You know, is there more to the story? I don't know.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was odd.
Yeah, that is a little odd, right?
I remember several years ago when the space shuttle blew up here over Texas, there was debris just east of here.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, the people were finding it all over. Now, it wasn't in our town or anything, but, you know, an hour east of here.
Well, like I told you, they were gathering up out there where my brother-in-law and my nephew were at an archery tournament when all that went down.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and it was all right there around
what then. Town was that?
Oh, what am I trying to think of the little town that's down there? Past Waxahachie, past all, I can't remember the name of it now.
Was it where they had Marshall or something like that?
No.
Oh, speaking of Marshall, you're going to be out in that area soon.
Yeah. Well, up there close to it. Yeah, we're going to be heading to Arkansas next week. So, yeah, my wife and I will be up there at the, what is that? The Eureka, what do they call it? The Ozark Mountain UFO Conference.
You know
what they
call it? Yeah. There's going to be a lot of cool speakers there.
It's going to be interesting. Going to get to hang out with Mr. Redfern again, and I think Stanton's going to be there. I think this is like his last hurrah before he hangs it up, so I'm going to holler at him. I'm going to try to get him to come on the show, see if we can't get him rounded
up. That'd
be
cool.
See what's going on. But there's going to be a bunch. Chase will be there. The D-Man will be hanging out. I'll get in some trouble with Dolan. We'll hang out, and we'll get to see Hobo and Bird and see all that stuff. So it'll be a good time.
All the people from KGRA.
Oh, yeah. Everybody there and all that stuff. Hey, Philly, you remember not long ago we were talking about the werewolves and the wolfman sightings and stuff they've been having, right?
Yeah. That and these flying humanoids everybody's been seeing. I mean, that seems to be...
That's the going thing.
That's the going thing. is the flying humanoids or dog men.
Yeah. This one caught my eye because of it took place in Arkansas. Yeah, this sighting. You're going to dig this. Yeah, you're going to like it. Of course, this comes from my buddies at Cryptozoology News. There's a man in Cleburne County. Says he and his friend came across a humanoid, but it had a wolf head.
What?
Yeah, get a load of this. This is a 33-year-old technician, Chris Branch, was interviewed by Cryptozoology News, and that his next-door neighbor was the one to actually see the creature back this past February. Says that the man specified a location, but it will remain, you ready, undisclosed due for privacy reasons, which I'm fine with. We had Dark Waters on. You know, he's talking about all the spots. Like, he really can't tell everybody because people want to go out there messing around. Might not be the best thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So Chris tells this. He said, I have heard it moving around, but haven't seen it. My buddy Dell one night could not sleep. It was around 2 a.m. And he said he had a strange feeling and went to check on his horse, so he grabbed his flashlight. And says as he approached the horse, everything seemed normal. But however, when he pointed the flashlight at the edge of the woods, he noticed a real unusual shape. It says that it was sitting close to the ground, very still, but he couldn't make out what it really was until he got a little closer. Now, you ready for this? This is what's rough. At about 30 feet or so, he stopped and noticed it was moving. So this fellow's walking there with the flashlight on.
Yeah, right, yeah.
30 feet away.
Mm.
Said at first thought it was a very big man wearing black and digging his fingers into the ground. But as he spoke to it with a very loud voice, this thing stopped what it was doing, looked up at Dell, and made eye contact. Says he goes on to say that when his neighbor realized it was not a human being, fear came over him.
I'll bet.
Yeah. No shocker there. Says Dell backed away from this thing. Says he knew it wasn't a bear or a dog, but it says it was more of the body of a bodybuilder with a wolf head. Now, we've heard these dog men, why are they so muscular?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like they report them being just yoked.
Yeah, you never hear one frail and weak looking. Yeah. No.
Now, he goes on to say that this man says everybody in the area thinks they are crazy or on drugs, but that he has also heard the creature moving at night. Says, I've heard it growl and I've seen claw marks in the trees around that little line of woods. Says, I know what I've heard and Dale knows what he saw, and this is no lie. So, look. Everybody can always, like we always say, you could say this is no lie. It doesn't mean it's not a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people have lied not to go to, you kill that person? Nah. Psh, didn't even know him. Then you find out, oh, yeah, he killed him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those. So, yeah, dude, it could be a lie. I don't say this is, you just, you know, I don't know. But I don't understand, just like we've talked about, it's either something like this happened or it's a blatant lie. There's no in between. When you're 30 feet from something, you don't misidentify a black bear as a bodybuilding humanoid dog-headed creature.
Well, you're right. But the bigger question for me is, why now? Mm-hmm. Like, werewolves have been in movies and stories for a long time. Why, just within the last 10 years, everybody is seeing Dog Man? What's causing that? Is it just word of mouth? And then people are coming forward and like, well, I saw it years ago, but I never wanted to say anything. But now that you said it, I know that I'm not crazy. I'm not the only one that sits on it. Or is it people just having fun and just making up stuff because they heard somebody else do it?
I understand what you're saying. And, of course, you know, I have no answer
for that.
But I understand what you mean. Because I've often wondered, I'd like to go back and look at these. Is it because of the freedom of this information? It's easier to share these sightings. It's easier to share this information to throw in your
Because
two
of the internet?
Because of the internet, yes. I would like to go and look at, from the release of The Beast of Bray Road by Linda Godfrey, how much of a spike these things have taken since then.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you would always hear rumblings years and years ago of, I think I saw a werewolf, I think I saw, but it was never really discussed with any sincerity. We discuss, you know, Bigfoot, but you never heard that being discussed. And like we said before, why is Bigfoot okay, but Dogman is not? You know, that's what's funny, is why is it okay to go, I understand Bigfoot, but Dogman I just can't get on board with. One's no greater or lesser than the other, in my opinion. But when you look at that, I would like to see the peak, or if there is a peak or jump in the stories received from that moment.
Well, I remember The Beast of Bray Road, like you were mentioning, in that book. I mean, here it was, a small town, and the local sheriff, told Linda that they had a whole file dedicated to it in his filing cabinet, that they've gotten reports of a werewolf from residents for years.
Yeah.
So what all jokes aside, say it wasn't a werewolf. It wasn't a werewolf, right?
Okay, it's not a werewolf.
But what were the residents in and around that town in Wisconsin, what were they seeing? And why were they all, they didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. So like the Coopers, they reported that they saw something that looked like a werewolf. They don't know mm-hmm. what it was. Sheriff Bob, I saw, you don't think I'm crazy, Bob. It looked like a werewolf. He puts it, he makes the notes of it. Okay, we'll be on the lookout for a strange dog or something, yeah. you know, puts it in the file. They forgets about it.
Yep.
9 months later, he gets another report from the Smiths. He goes out and interviews the Smiths. Well, what did you see? What was it doing? Well, it was in my trash can and it was rooting around. Well, Bob, I know this sounds crazy, but it looked like a werewolf. So he notes, wow, that's weird. And then, so
he's
years
just
later,
stockpiling
he presents
all
it to Linda and there's
yeah.
like 16 cases. I mean, so what were the people seeing and why were they all thinking it looked yeah. like a werewolf? My other question when it comes to Dogman is it always a Dogman? Or is it truly like a lycanthrop and it's a human that's transforming into it like a skinwalker mm-hmm. into the Dogman? I don't know. You start thinking about it, you have more questions than answers. And I know that you don't have any yeah. answers. I'm just voicing this because this is a public forum.
I feel the same way with Lyle's book about the lizard man, the Bishopville
yeah,
lizard.
Right.
It's the same thing. It's like, I understand dreaming up certain things, but how would you dream up a big reptilian?
Yeah.
I mean, like, where would that come from? And it was multiple, you know, it's, I don't know. It's just some really, and the fact that it loves fish fillet sandwiches.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. like, I don't know. It's just, it's fascinating. These are things that I don't know. Is it, part of me feels like people are making this up because they're getting bored with the stories that are out there now.
Right, like there's too many Sasquatch stories. So they're like, well, if I'm going to make up a story, I'm going to do a real
I want it
juicy
to be fun.
One.
Yeah, I want yeah. it to be a fun one. And then other parts of me are like, well, maybe it's like you said, maybe the skinwalkers, maybe nobody talked about it. Maybe I don't know. There's just, it's too much, man.
And
it's too much.
And part of the problem with the human brain is like once you're aware of the sightings of Dogman, now when you see something in the woods, your mind starts playing tricks on yep. you. Like how many people have never been abducted by grays? I mean, I've never seen a gray,
mm-hmm.
but when I have a terrible nightmare or dream, I dream about them, what they look like, because I've seen it in movies
yeah.
and I've read it in books and seen pictures of it. So how much of that is affecting people?
Yeah.
Where if they were totally unaware and you never saw a werewolf movie, you were unaware of the howling.
You were unaware of Dogman sightings, period.
Right, and you saw something in the woods. How many of those people would be like, oh, well, I saw a bear. And some bear kind of look like a dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
for sure.
So I'm, you know, in Arkansas, there's black bear known mm-hmm. to be in there. So that's another thing that makes me, well, you know, like it's a totally different sighting when someone has a Dogman encounter like in Nevada.
Yes.
Compared to like when you're saying Arkansas, Oklahoma, there seems to be a lot of them. You know, these are areas known to house bears. So
it would make, yeah,
it's misidentification.
It
is what I
be.
Truly feel. It's misidentification.
Well, I want it to be. I don't want there to be eight. But
no.
Just like the fellas we had on the show that had it right beside him,
right beside
it with a pistol. You're like, well, what is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, there's some, well, there's no way for us to stack it in a pile.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work.
Speaking of strange sightings, I'm still keeping up with these flying humanoids.
Yes.
There's been another strange encounter. This was written into Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters. Pretty interesting. This one took place in Quebec. Back in December of 2017, check this out. She said, I was visiting rural Quebec, St. Edgar, New Richmond, to be exact, over the holidays in December 2017. My boyfriend's mom and grandmother live there, along with most of that side of his family, since his parents are long divorced. There was a lot of snow on the ground and more coming down every day and night. But on this night, there was very little snow coming down, and it was easier to see at night. My boyfriend and I had taken his grandmother's car to go out and do some drifting down a long road surrounded by forest. It's the same road everyone who is in the local to the area uses for racing. There's so little to do in this tiny town that people will actually get drunk and go racing down this winding road for fun. And, believe it or not, friends and family will come to watch and cheer them on. There are a lot of car accidents in this area. And this area is also overflowing with wildlife. Deer, bear, moose, coyotes, wolves, rabbits, skunks, etc. It's a fantastic area for hunting when it's legal. So picture this. My boyfriend is driving us to his mother's house and we've been drifting on purpose and laughing and obviously scared of what we were doing, but having a great time. We're almost to the end of the road and because of the drifting, it's taken longer than usual to get home. Something swoops through the forest and through the trees to our right, just above where the headlights are, lighting up, so we can't see all of it anymore. The thing is so large and heavy that the trees it touched are swaying all around. It had huge black wings that acted as sort of a blanket that covered and blacked out the already dark sky, and its shape was indistinguishable beyond that. The only thing I could describe it as was a moose with wings, minus the four legs, but it definitely was not a moose. That's just to explain the size of this thing. My boyfriend almost swerved into the trees. He and I were really startled and panicked the whole rest of the drive home, and instead of drifting, we just drove straight home. He refuses to believe it was anything supernatural and decided it must have been the world's largest owl. I told him that if he ever finds an owl the size of the car, he should rest assured it was not an owl. I hadn't thought about this until a couple days ago when I was listening to a compilation of stories about skinwalkers, and it got me to thinking if what my boyfriend and I saw was some sort of cryptid. The closest thing I can think of that it resembles would be a mix of the Mothman or the Jersey Devil. I have no idea. Hopefully this is useful to you. So what do you think of that? They saw something huge. She said it looked the size of a moose, swaying the trees and bending them as it swooped over.
See, what can that be?
I don't know. But also, you know, I have to bring up, they talk about the drinking and the racing and the drift. First, who's drifting in grandma's car?
That's all you got, baby. That's all they got. Hand on.
And I get it. I'm from a small town. You are too. I remember doing silly things like
last week.
Yeah, last week. Yeah, I was drifting in my mom's car. But, you know, and they don't mention that they had anything to drink. But, you know, what could they see? What was that?
But, I mean,
once again, is it just something because they were under the influence of something, it appeared larger than it was, or because it startled them, it appeared larger than it really was? I mean, you know, eyewitness accounts are like some of the worst.
But, I mean, I had too much to drink one time, and I still didn't see anything like that.
I've had stuff to drink lots of times, and I've never seen a cryptid.
So, but my thing is, what would you misidentify something that's whipping the trees, and it's the size of a moose?
Yeah, yeah.
I always think of the idea of one of them, like, you know, it's always the joke, like you wash your car, and then something flies over and takes a dump on it.
Yeah.
Imagine a bird the size of a moose dropping mud on your car when it flew over.
That would not be good. That would not be good.
Just knock the whole front end out. You'd just be like, what just happened? What is this? That would be my kind of luck. Yeah. Uh-huh. But you bring this up and you're talking about grays. I'm like, you must have paid attention or looked over my shoulder, because I want to read you this story. This is a MUFON encounter. It's called Humanoids in the Woods. Now you're gonna dig this. It says this took place in Ohio. The person wrote this in, said, I was looking for a spot to set up a quick campsite in a small patch of woods along a public bicycle path in west central Ohio. I was cold and eager to get a small fire going and get inside my sleeping bag. Now, the area is a refuge for stray cats, and many locals there drop off their unwanted stray, you know, cats and critters in this area, and some local kind-hearted folks feed them and provide plastic containers out there for their shelter. Says, when I found what I thought would be a suitable spot to set up camp, I set my bag down, walked a few steps to a large tree to go to the bathroom. Said I had a small flashlight in my bag, but the night sky provided enough light after my eyes adjusted. Suddenly, a cat dashed through the brush very near me, kind of scared me a bit, and then another further to the left. And as I looked towards the sound of the last cat running, I could make out the shape of the plastic containers in a small circle that housed some of these cats. I then noticed three sets of pinkish-orange glowing objects with slight movement. At first, I assumed these glowing objects were the reflections of these three cats' eyes, and after watching the objects further, approximately 30 seconds, I saw that the glowing was in fact some sort of eyewear worn by three human-like figures. Yeah.
They're wearing glasses?
Glowing eyewear, my friend. Yeah, I'm sure Snapchat glasses, baby. And it says, as I knelt down to watch, I could see these figures were handling the cats. And the subjects were wearing very low-reflective, off-white or gray coveralls. And after about 2 minutes, all three subjects turned their heads towards me. Now, thinking they might be animal control workers and not wanting to frighten them, I stood up and said, how y'all doing? With no vocal response, all three began moving towards me instantly, closing to 30 foot that separate us. Slowly again I spoke, saying, "What are you guys doing out here?" They continued moving towards me. Now I heard them talking or communicating, but inside my head, and it was a strange whisper that I couldn't understand. Says, I also noticed they were shorter than me. I'm 5'10", and I would guess they were roughly 8 to 10 inches shorter than I am. At that moment, I turned and ran.
Yeah.
Says, I then walked a circle around the area and noticed that there were no vehicles and no signs of activity. So.
Bizarre.
What did you bump into in these woods? It's humanoids 5 foot tall and out there taking care of cats. Now, easily, could it have been some old grandmas that were out there just, oh, grandma, you know, and they couldn't hear too well?
I don't know.
You know, they got a little headlamp on, a little glowing light. I don't know. Or, because, oh, okay, the minute I thought of this, I thought of Hellboy 2 and that old homeless woman that's actually a troll and she's going to eat the cats. That's what I've always thought of when I think of this thing. But I don't know what it could possibly be. But I've never heard a story of alien grays in coveralls gathering up cats.
Not cats, but Alf. You remember Alf liked to eat cats.
He loved to eat cats.
So maybe it's...
It makes me... Just right now, it just hits me. Makes me think of the cattle mutilations.
Yeah, right.
You know, like nobody's ever seen one. That's always my thing. Nobody ever saw one go down. Nobody ever saw a cattle mutilation.
Nope, it's always like, at night. Yeah. Black helicopters are seen, things like that.
I would just maybe.
But still like the cleanup crew, though.
Maybe these are the people that are doing it.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Well, let's take a break, folks. When we get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some trucker ghost stories. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Truck drivers are some of the most important people in our economy. You often don't think about it, but these men and women make up a huge part of our everyday lives. A big portion of our listeners are truck drivers. It's a tough job that everyone relies on. The United States economy depends on trucks to deliver over 10 billion tons of various commodities. In the United States, this accounts for 700.4 billion worth of goods hauled by trucks every year. Any disruption in the truck transportation services will cause lots of economic disruptions in all sectors of the economy. Trucks carry nearly 68% of all goods moved from producers to sellers. To say that they are important would be a vast understatement. With the inevitable coming of driverless cars and trucks already on the horizon, many of these people will be out of jobs. And along with the loss of jobs, there will be the loss of stories associated with the road. That's right, folks. Many of the stories you've heard about on this show, like phantom hitchhikers, time slips, UFOs, and ghosts of long-dead accident victims, have all come from truck drivers. These people spend a lot of time behind the wheel, in remote areas, oftentimes in the deepest parts of the night. That is precisely why they have more unusual encounters on the road than any other group. Well, recently I went to the Expanded Perspectives Library and I found two books that had some pretty interesting encounters that I'm going to tell you about. The first book is called Trucker Ghost Stories and it's written by Annie Wilder. And in the book, she gives lots of encounters that truckers have had while out doing their job. And on today's show, I'm going to talk about a few of these. Now, this first story comes from a woman named Barbara Dexter, and it took place in my home state of Texas, so it immediately held my attention. Check this out. She says, "My ex-husband was a truck driver. His run was mostly Toronto to California, hauling produce for years. I went with him on a few of these runs. We had many weird or freaky experiences, but one stands out as an especially good one. We were in the truck one night, sleeping somewhere in Texas, when we heard someone around the truck. Cameron, my husband at the time, got up to look around. He came back into the bunk shortly after, saying that he had seen nothing out there but the black night. We settled back into the bunk again, only to hear someone rap on the door. This time, we both jumped up, wondering who in the hell would be out there in the middle of nowhere walking around. This time, he got his gun and used a flashlight to see outside into the pitch darkness. There was no one to be seen. We had been robbed a few times in the past, so he got dressed and proceeded to get out of the truck and check the trailer and under the truck. I waited inside with the doors locked. He yelled at me to come on out. He could hear something and wanted my opinion. I was reluctant, but I went. I walked with him to the back of the trailer. Off in the woods, we could hear what sounded like people talking in the distance, but we couldn't make out what they were saying or how close they were. Their voices seemed to move. From the woods where we parked, by to the other side of the road, in the other woods, the woods on the other side of the road. We stood there for quite a few minutes just listening. We were puzzled, but thought maybe it was someone's house close by in the woods, perhaps having a party, and we could just not see the lights of the house. So, again we got back into the truck. We decided to stay up and sit in the dark and just try to watch out into the night after letting our eyes adjust to the darkness. After what seemed like only a few minutes, we could see movement on the road ahead of us. It looked like a group of people crossing the road from one bush to another about 100 feet in front of the truck. So, my husband turns on the truck headlights, and we see nothing. It was like they disappeared. Now we are getting scared because we both saw the same thing before we turned on the lights. It looked like a group of people walking across the road. We also heard them talking. We sat looking at each other, puzzled. Now we were starting to really get scared. We decided to investigate this more since we wanted to be reassured we weren't seeing things. There had to be an explanation for what we saw. So we got out of the truck with flashlights and walked up the center of the road, which no cars or trucks had been on for hours. We got to the spot where we thought the people had crossed and looked for signs in the long grass as we walked up the road with our flashlights. There seemed to be no signs of grass bent over or disturbed, not even a critter track. We stopped walking, and again, we heard voices and people talking in the woods, but could not see any lights in the woods or any sign of housing or habitation. My husband wanted to walk into the bush. His curiosity gets his better side. Me? I wanted to go back to the truck and leave. Cameron, well, he started into the woods, down through the ditch. I followed, not wanting to be left alone. We walked into the thick bush, about 200 yards or so, and could still hear people, but couldn't make it out. It did not sound like a party or campers. It sounded like, well, chanting to me. I stopped and I said, I'm not going any farther. I want to go back to the truck. My husband Cameron agreed. He appeared to be more scared than me now. Well, we started heading back to the road, and when we got to the road, we could see the truck. It was a sign of comfort, whew, a sign of home. We walked slowly, shining our flashlights into the grass at the edge of the ditch on each side of the road. My husband was right beside me, step for step, when he said, "Do you see that guy over there?" As he grasped my arm to stop me from walking farther, I looked to where he was shining his flashlight, and I saw a man in a cavalry uniform at the edge of the woods, just ahead of us. He almost faded away as soon as I saw him. My husband said, "Did you see him?" And I said, yes, yes, I did. As he pulled me to start walking again, we were now steps from the truck, and mutually, without a word, we made a run for it. We reached the truck's driver's door, and I have never climbed in so fast in my entire life. We locked the door and sat in the dark for a few minutes looking around. Again, we saw what looked like a large group of people crossing the road in front of us. My husband started the truck and said, "We ain't staying here tonight." We sat in the truck waiting for it to warm up a bit and kept watching out the windows. We dimmed the dashboard lights and just watched. We saw more groups cross the road, all going the same way, all in the same direction. But they were like shadows. They really weren't solid looking. The truck was warm now, and my husband put it in gear and started to roll slowly down the road. Both of us were looking, with eyes as big as saucers now. We felt safer now that we were moving, but we were still scared of what we had just seen but could not explain. We didn't speak about it for an hour. We hit the main highway and soon came to an exit with a motel sign. I knew then how scared my ex-husband was when he hit his signal and pulled into the hotel. This was his first stay at a hotel in years. We talked about it to each other before we fell asleep in our new cozy rented bed. And in the morning, Cameron circled the truck before we left and came in to get me. He said, "Barbara, you got to come take a look at this." When I went out into the morning sunshine, I could see plain as day what he was showing me. There were many handprints on the sides of the dusty trailer, like hundreds of them, way bigger than mine would be. They were not fresh. They had dust over them, and there were a lot of them. We had just had the truck and trailer washed at the stop 8 hours earlier. We had bunked down on that back road and had never stopped in between the two stops. If the handprints had been made at the hotel, we felt they would have been fresher looking, with no dust on top of them. It was a paved lot we parked in at the hotel, but it was a dirt road we stopped to sleep on just off the highway. We made it to Nevada to pick up our load of cucumbers that trip and never really talked about it again. We even got another hotel on the way back, which was a big treat for me. It felt safer. I stayed home for a while after that trip. I don't know if others have had the same experiences in that area or out on the road, but that one stands out to me as probably the most incredible experience I've ever had. Thanks, Barbara. I like that story. It's pretty creepy, you know, with the hands all over it and them seeing the cavalry soldier and seeing the shadows crossing the road. It, you know, it makes you think that for some reason they were seeing, you know, the ghost of an army battalion or something, a platoon or something, you know, crossing the road. Very, very interesting. This next story I think you'll enjoy. I don't know what category this fits in, if this is a time slip or perhaps just a ghost story, but it's very intriguing nonetheless. It's about someone being stranded far from home, and it goes like this. It says, "I was a 17-year-old student, broke and stranded at the Pan Am Halfway House, an old British officer's quarters at the airport in Karachi, Pakistan. It was December of 1965, and I had been in between planes on my way from Istanbul, where I had been in an isolation ward with spinal meningitis, to Bombay to meet my ship, a floating college campus. A war broke out in Kashmir, a contested province between Pakistan and India, and all flights to India were cancelled. I had been stuck at the old Pan Am barracks for almost 2 weeks. The makeshift hotel looked just like the British fort in the old Cary Grant movie, Gunga Din. Anyways, the Pakistanis had torched the U.S. Embassy in Karachi and cut off all forms of international communications. I had no way of telling my family where I was, and no one to turn to for financial help. The hotel manager asked me if I had any money to pay for my lodging and meals, and I told him that I didn't have nearly enough. I had 4 JFK 50-cent pieces, 2 packs of Marlboros, and a day to come up with a couple $100 for room and board. The manager said that I had one more night before he had to report me to the authorities, who would probably put me into a Pakistani debtor's prison. I had found one book to read a beat-up old paperback about the sinking of the German battleship Graf Spee in Montevideo Harbor in 1940. So, I spent my last afternoon reading it. That evening, I went to the bar, determined to get as sloshed as I could on my last $2. As I nursed my first Cuba Libre, I was amazed to hear a Brazilian samba. I turned to see a tall, tanned, aristocratic-looking gentleman in a white tropical suit enter the bar. He was carrying a portable tape recorder. He looked like a character right out of Casablanca. He took the stool next to me. We were the only people in the place. I asked him in Spanish where he was from. He told me he was from Montevideo, Uruguay. In the course of the conversation, he told me that his name was Victor Haig and that he was working as an engineer for General Electric on a dam project in Kashmir, and that he was headed home until the war blew over. I told him who I was and that it was quite likely I would be hanging around Pakistan, probably behind bars for a while. He asked me to join him for dinner, and I gladly accepted. We went into the dining room, the same Victorian British officer's mess that you saw in the Wee Willy Winky, and over the oxtail soup and lamb curry, we talked. I told him that I had been reading a book about the Graf Spee and Montevideo, Uruguay. He commented that it certainly was a coincidence because he had actually witnessed the sinking of the battleship. He talked for quite a while about how the ship, badly damaged in battle, had been scuttled in deep water just outside Montevideo Harbor. He recalled that the captain had wrapped himself in the old Imperial German flag and committed suicide. After dinner and some brandy, Victor said he had a very early plane to catch and went to his room. I never saw him again. Well, I went back to my room to get one last good night's sleep before they came to take me away. At 6 a.m., I awoke to a sharp knock on the door. I opened the door, and instead of the constable, it was the hotel manager. He said that I should dress immediately and get my things packed. And then came the bombshell. The manager said that the gentleman that I had dinner with had paid my hotel bill and left me a ticket for Pan Am Flight 2 to San Francisco, which was leaving in 45 minutes. Victor Haig had, in all probability, saved my life. After I got back to the States, I contacted General Electric in an effort to locate this Victor Haig, but they had no record of anyone by that name on their payroll. Almost 5 years later, I was in Buenos Aires, and I took a boat across the Mar del Plata to Montevideo to see if I could find Victor and his family. I talked to the commissioner of police, and he personally helped me search through the Hall of Records, but we had found no listing of a Victor Haig anywhere in Montevideo or any of its suburbs. Well, a few years ago, I ran across some obscure German naval records. There was a junior officer named Victor Haig on the crew of the Graf Spee. He was killed in battle and buried at sea in 1940. So that's pretty crazy that he saw the ghost, not only met the ghost of a guy that died on that battleship in a book that he had been reading, and the guy paid his hotel bill and bought him airfare to get home. I don't know what I think about that. It's a very interesting story. I don't know if it's real, but I'd like to think it is. I love good ghost stories, and I know you do too. Let's check out this next one. This next one is from a guy named Terry Aldershoff. And for any of you veterans out there, I think you're going to enjoy this. It was April 8th, 1979, almost 4 years to the day, that the last U.S. military helicopter left the roof of the embassy in Saigon, leaving the country and its spoils to the victorious General Nguyen Van Thone of the North Vietnamese Army. It wasn't a day I wanted to remember. I hadn't even thought about that day for years, not since I watched our defeated troops withdraw on television. I returned home from Vietnam in 1970, and at that time, I was still naive enough to believe we were actually winning over there. However, today was different. Today, I met someone that reminded me of the significance of that day, of the war, and of the friends I had not seen in years. I stopped at an all-night diner in Newburgh, New York. Their food was always a little too garlicky, but it was tolerable. Their coffee, on the other hand, was always strong enough to strip paint, just the way I liked it. I was on my way to a small town called Red Hook for a 10 a.m. appointment with a crane. It was about a 2.5-hour drive from Newburgh, so I was not in any particular rush. I was, however, looking forward to a good night's sleep and a full stomach. There were half a dozen trucks in the parking lot, with their engines idling, but there was only one other driver in the diner. Within a few minutes after my arrival, he dropped a couple of dollars on the counter and left, leaving me the sole diner. As I pushed my plate away, I noticed movement in my peripheral vision from the far end of the restaurant. Thinking I was alone, I turned towards the movement. In the last booth, there was a young Marine sitting quietly with his hands folded on the table. I wondered to myself how I hadn't noticed him before. I was prepared to leave, but something compelled me to sit and talk with him for a while. I caught the waitress's attention, indicating I wanted two cups of coffee brought to the booth in the corner. I asked the Marine if he minded if I joined him for a few minutes. "No, sir. Please, sit down," he responded. There's nothing like a Marine to be sickeningly polite and to make you feel like an old man at the same time. As I slid into the booth across from him, I noticed the four rows of combat ribbons on his chest and his rank. He was a Lance Corporal. He couldn't be much more than 20 or 21 years old. He would have been maybe 14 when those medals were handed out. I recognized them because I have most of the same ones. He wore the yellow, red, and green Vietnam service ribbon, right next to the green and white Vietnam campaign ribbon. One row up, dead center, he wore the uniquely distinctive red, green, and yellow Vietnam unit citation ribbon. In the top row, he wore, among others, the Purple Heart with an oak leaf cluster, meaning he had been wounded more than once. I was fascinated, though, by the unit citation ribbon. I pointed to it and asked him, "Could you tell me about it?" "This one?" he asked, as he pointed to the unit citation on his chest. "Yes," I said. It's for the battle at Khe Sanh," he answered. "Have you ever heard of it?" "Oh, yes, I have, I told him. "I was at the Battle of Wei." His eyes widened at the name, then became distant as he remembered the war and the memories. The waitress brought us our coffee and set the bill in front of me. Once she was out of earshot, he began to tell me a story. It was a story I knew quite well. I had friends that were part of the 3rd Marine Division and were under siege for 77 days. Most of them died at Khe Sanh, defending an abandoned airbase. Over the next hour, he convinced me that he was, in fact, the real deal, even though he looked too young, and that he had been there and suffered all of the indignities the rest of us suffered while we were over there. He talked of friends he had lost and how much the experience has changed his luck on life. While we talked, I noticed a few drivers coming and going. Most stopped only long enough to get their thermos filled or to eat a slice of pie. No one paid any particular attention to us, and this young Marine seemed oblivious to everyone. Everyone, that is, except me. At the counter, an elderly driver sat down and ordered a cup of coffee. This was the first time the Marine paid the slightest attention to anyone else in the diner. He watched the old man intently. He wasn't at all surprised when the driver started coughing uncontrollably. I listened as the old driver choked and coughed, watching the expression on the Marine's face the whole time. He was concerned. I could see it in his eyes. Finally, the old man's coughing fit subsided, and he paid his bill and left. I looked at my watch and realized I had been talking to this young man for almost 3 hours now, and I didn't even know his name. So I introduced myself, and he told me his name was Timothy O'Hara. I took a napkin and wrote out my name and number. I left it in front of him and told him that he could call me anytime, for any reason, even if all he needed was to talk. He turned his head and watched as the old man that had been coughing at the counter only moments before turned out of the parking lot heading north. I looked up just in time to see the words, "Seabright," in black letters across the back doors of the trailer. I picked up the check and turned toward the cashier when he said very softly, "Not yet, sir. Don't leave yet." I turned and asked him to repeat what he had just said. He said, I apologize. I'm a little hard of hearing. He said, "Please don't go yet, sir. Just stay. Just a few more minutes." Well, I sat back down. I asked if he needed a ride somewhere, and I said I would be more than happy to drop him anywhere he wanted to go. He smiled and thanked me, but explained that he was waiting for someone. He had made a promise to a friend years before to meet right here at this diner on the anniversary of their rescue from Khe Sanh. Well, we sat in silence for almost 10 minutes while he finally said that I could go now, that it was safe. So I went and got in my truck. I tore a page from my notebook and wrote down the name Timothy O'Hara. I folded it and I put it in my wallet. I wouldn't look at it again until 5 years later. It was getting late, and my opportunity to get a good night's sleep was rapidly diminishing. I pulled out of the parking lot and headed north to Red Hook. The River Road going north to Albany is a beautiful drive during the day, and it is a fast and traffic-free late at night. I love to drive it. I was back up to cruising speed after passing through Poughkeepsie, and I rounded a blind curve. I slammed on the brakes, for just in front of me, two semis had just slammed into each other. The trailers hadn't even stopped rocking as I rounded the curve. The truck that apparently caused the accident was heading north when he crossed into the southbound lanes, hitting the other truck head-on, causing a chain reaction. The force of the impact had popped open the trailer doors of the northbound truck. As they swung freely, I managed to read the words, "Seabright," in bold black letters. I pulled my truck to the shoulder and turned on my four-ways. I took a handful of road flares out of my side compartment, struck them, and threw them as far back up the road as possible. I went to the old man's cab, but the door was crushed shut from the impact. The driver's door window was shattered, so I climbed up and leaned in. The driver was dead. He had no pulse, but he did have white froth around his mouth and chin. I found out later that he had apparently suffered a massive heart attack. There were 4 trucks and 5 cars involved in the accident that night. There were 3 fatalities, not including the old driver that suffered the heart attack. Had I left the diner when I tried to the first time, I would have been running directly behind the old man when he had his fatal heart attack. I have no doubt, would have been in the 5th truck and possibly the 4th fatality that day. I promised myself to one day locate Timothy O'Hara through the Marine Corps directory and thank him personally. Washington, D.C. is one of the 2 worst cities in America to drive a truck in. The other is Salt Lake City. They are both designed like a set of enormous traffic circles radiating out from one central location. Each quadrant is numbered and lettered exactly the same, except for the directional indicators like north-northwest or south-southeast. The compass points are calculated from either the Mormon Temple or the Capitol Building, depending on which city you happen to be lost in at the time. I was in Washington, D.C., along with 6 other trucks in the fall of 1984. I was involved in a large equipment move for a trade show. We were led downtown in a convoy with police escorts. It was nice. I think had they not provided the escorts, I would probably still be driving around lost, looking for a large round building that wasn't the Capitol. Well, once we were unloaded, we were again escorted to the staging area, where we would park until the show was over, and then we would reload and leave town. The next morning during breakfast, a few of the drivers were discussing taking a trip to see the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. It sits just adjacent to the National Mall. It was less than 0.5 mile, and we figured we could walk that distance faster than we could probably drive. So, we left on foot as soon as we finished our breakfast. I had a few names I wanted to look up. One was my friend Kevin. We had been together since boot camp, and he died in my arms in 1968 during an ambush in Vietnam's Death Valley. Once we got there, I stopped at the Welcome Center. I looked at the directory and found his name and where it was located. I walked to the panel marked 70E. The last date listed is March 25th, 1968. I found my friend Kevin's name and started to rummage around in my pockets for a pencil and a piece of paper so I could rub his name like everyone else was doing. I opened my wallet
and found a long piece of notebook paper folded and stuffed into the corner. Unfolding it, I saw the name I had written on it 5 years before, Timothy O'Hara. I had completely forgotten Timothy and how he quite possibly saved my life that night in New York. I didn't want to destroy his name by rubbing Kevin's name over it. People were friendly enough, and I quickly found someone with a sheet of notebook paper they were willing to give me. I walked back to panel 70E to rub Kevin's name when, all of a sudden, I was struck by something I really didn't expect to see. Two rows down and one name over, there it was. Timothy O'Hara. I found his name in the archives. Lance Corporal Timothy O'Hara died on March 24, 1968 at Quezon. As my own reflection stared back from the sea of black granite, with Timothy's name floating in the middle, I wonder if the person he was waiting for that night ever showed up, or would he be obligated to repeat the meeting ritual every anniversary until he does? Or was Timothy waiting for me? I don't know. I really like that story. I don't know. It sends chills down my spine when I think about it. And I know that before we started the segment, I mentioned that I was going to do two books. I think I'm going to leave it to just one book for right now. I think I'm going to talk about the second book on the Elite Show. So until then, I hope you enjoyed those stories. Again, the book, if you like those kind of stories, you need to go out and get it. It's called Trucker Ghost Stories by Annie Wilder. I will put links to it in the show notes. Let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I like those stories, especially the one where the guy met the what appeared to be a Vietnam soldier in the diner. I don't know. And then later was visiting the Memorial Wall there in Washington and then saw his name. I don't know. I love stories like that.
Yes.
I have no idea if, you know, if all of these are true or not, but they're very interesting nonetheless. I like to believe that they are, that that people out there working for a living are always having these strange encounters in these small diners out in the middle of nowhere. I don't know why I always picture that, but I like those kind of
because
stories.
Because they're awesome.
Yeah, right. They are. They're great. Me and the family, we were planning on taking a canoe trip down the river here, but we've been inundated with lots of rain lately, so we had to put that off, and we didn't get to do that. And now we got several baseball tournaments in a row coming up, so we're going to have to put it off even longer. So hopefully, before the end of May, we're going to get to go down the river and do some canoeing and some fishing. Do you have any, I know you mentioned that you were going to Arkansas, but that's just you and your wife.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any plans as far as kayaking or fishing or doing
stuff course.
Like that? Yeah.
I've got some wild fishing trips that my son and I are planning. I still want to run back down again to Florida.
Right.
Do some more offshore stuff down there. We're supposed to go down. We were going to go this past weekend, but we couldn't get loose. But yeah, we've got a trip down the Brazos planned, and then he's got another. I think we're going to try to do the Buffalo River. Up
very
there
good.
In Arkansas, something along those
That's
lines.
That's cool. Me and my wife, I didn't know this till yesterday. Our anniversary is coming up. It'll be our 10-year anniversary. And my wife wanted to go somewhere special. And so she wanted to go to Key West. She's been there before.
Oh,
I've
nice.
I've never been. And I was like, well, yeah, but that's going to be way expensive. So she found the flights and everything pretty decent. I mean, like round trip airfare on Southwest to Fort Lauderdale is like $150.
So you're going, huh?
It looks good. Chances are good. So if I
Heading
get to go down
Key
there,
West.
I would like to do some fishing and stuff like that.
You can do a bunch of blow while you're down there, smuggle some drugs. Why
yeah.
not, huh? Right?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody brings drugs to Key West.
No.
My anniversary is actually next week, next Thursday.
Yeah, I knew that coming. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That will be, 24 years.
24 years.
24 years, yeah.
Yeah, once you make, I don't know, because of course I've never been married that long, or as long as I have now, I've never been married before, but a guy told me that I ran
You're not going to count that one? Okay, yeah, we're not going to count that one. Go ahead.
He told me that after 10 years, you pretty much got it whipped. Like, if you can make it 10, The next 10 comes pretty quick.
Because they break you.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
They break you. You just give up on life. You just do what they say. I'm just a broken man. Hey, I want to give a quick, I know we don't do shout outs, but I'm going to give a quick Easter shout out to the lovely Mrs. Zoe Weeks. She's still fighting cancer.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little angel. We love her. And I hope she's doing wonderful. I hope you got a bunch of eggs. That's what I hope. And I hope they were all full of chocolate. And if you didn't, holler, and we'll mail some that way.
I hope you didn't get a Cadbury eggs, though. Those things are nasty.
Shut your mouth.
You like those?
Yes.
Ugh.
Yes. Yeah.
The Peeps?
I can't eat too many. Like, one. I can have one a year. They're too rich. Now, your brother is the nasty ass that likes to eat those Peeps.
I don't like marshmallows at all. The Peeps, I don't get it.
No.
I don't like the texture of marshmallows. I don't like that. Now, when I was a kid, I used to love it. I would even make, this is nasty, I would make like Fluffernutter sandwiches.
Peanut butter and Fluffernutter?
Yeah. I don't even know if they make that anymore. I think...
Because it killed too many people.
Yeah. It can't be good. It's nasty. I could imagine eating that.
Here's what I stirred up some trouble at the family get-together because I don't understand... I don't understand the Reese's peanut butter eggs. I'm like, all they are is a peanut butter cup. You just pour it in another mold. It's not like you're doing anything special. Why make it an egg?
Yeah, I don't get that.
You didn't change the color. Like, at least give it to M&M. They'll make these Easter colors. I get
right,
that.
Yeah, different colors.
A peanut butter cup is just a peanut butter cup that's in a different shape.
But Reese's are good.
That might
except
be.
Except they belong to Reese, because it's apostrophe S, which means
that's
he
true.
Owns them.
He owns them, or she owns them. One of them, whoever it is, owns them. Just like the Twix, the left Twix and the right Twix commercials. Those are great.
But what is that? That is an old Mitch Hedberg joke. The Reese's thing.
And now they do it on television.
They do his joke?
The commercials. The commercials are all left and right Twixes.
I was like, my boys, they tried to tell me a joke. And I was like, man, I've heard that before. And apparently on the schoolyard.
Somebody just found Mitch Hedberg.
Somebody's doing a Mitch Hedberg. They were like, Dad, is it really a hippopotamus or is it really just a really cool opotamus? I'm like, wait a minute, I've heard that before. Right? I was like, it's a Mitch Hedberg joke.
You're like, I need to introduce you to Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah, well, yeah. He worked clean.
Yeah,
I don't remember him cursing.
Well, there's a few. Yeah, there was a few he did.
That's a guy with just king of the one-liners, right?
He was great. Absolutely great.
Was great. What's also great is Dollar Shave Club. Don't forget they sponsor this show. We appreciate it. That allows us to continue to make it free for you. Just go to dollarshaveclub.com/expanded. Also, another proud sponsor, stamps.com. You have to go to stamps.com, folks. And when you get to the homepage, on the top of the screen, you'll see a little radio microphone. Click on that and type in the code word, the secret code word, expanded. And you'll get your discount there. Cam, what do you got planned for your weekend?
My weekend.
Anything exciting? I can't believe the cold spell. And I was just on the phone with my aunt. She said they think it's going to snow again in New Jersey. So this has been a crazy spring.
This week I've got a little work to get riled up since we're starting off this month. I got some training to do. I'll be at the gym 2 or 3 nights this week doing a little grappling. And let's see.
Before you finish that thought, El Kukui's out.
El Kukui hurt himself. Man, I thought it was come on, help me
April
out.
April Fool's joke.
That's it. Man, I'm dumb. I thought it was an April Fool's joke, but turns out, no. But
I knew it wouldn't be because I was like, that's too big. I don't think they would play around like that.
You can't
that.
Do that, yeah. So, El Kukui, Tony Ferguson, is out for his fight coming up this weekend with Khabib Nurmagomedov, the Eagle. And stepping in is the blessed one, Mr. Max Holloway.
I love Max Holloway.
Hawaiian Warriors.
I still have to. I give it to the Eagle Man.
Man, you know, I don't know. It's MMA fight. I don't know. Look, my mind says the Eagle. My heart says Max Holloway.
Yeah,
that's the way it feels. Yeah, that's. But I did see a statement from Dana White saying that they would never book Khabib and Tony again. This is the fourth time it's fell apart.
It's never happened.
Like, we're never doing it again.
So we'll never see that fight.
Well, maybe he swears we'll never do it again, but I still think the MMA gods will put them in the cage together.
We'll probably see it 15 years from now on Bellator, because they seem to be the king.
Dude, they got some good fights.
They
you do. Son of a gun.
The fighters are a little old.
Yeah. Well, not all of them, just the guys they try to get to headline. But,
like I heard Chuck Liddell wants to come back.
Well, you know why they won't let him come back?
Because it'll probably kill him.
No, they had to widen the gate to get his walker through. No, I don't want to see old guys like that fight again. I saw enough of it. I don't want to see anybody else get hurt. But yeah, I'm bummed out. So that was what I was doing this weekend too. And my niece's bachelorette party. So all my nieces, my daughter, all of them are going off to do stuff and that whole deal. Because we got 3 weeks till she gets married.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my other niece that has the baby that we always get to see every Tuesday, my great niece that just had her birthday. Well, we just found out this weekend she's having another baby. She surprised all of us. We thought it was an April Fool's joke, but it's not. So now we're wishing twins on her. She's mad at us, not talking right now.
Well, that's good. I got, like I mentioned on the Elite Show, my continuing education is complete. My license was sent away. I'm waiting for its arrival, but the upper hands at the state tell me that I should be expecting it any day now. I'm sorry. So I've actually had kind of 2 days where I haven't really done anything. It's kind of been nice. It's always funny. You always want to have time off, but then when you actually get it, now it's different if you go somewhere, like I've mentioned Key West, or like when me and my wife went to California.
So what you're saying is you're stuck
but
here with
home,
the family.
I don't know what it is wrong with me. I cannot relax. Like, I cannot just sit down.
It's because you hate your family and they hate you.
Wow, that's not very nice. But so I get stir crazy. So like I start wishing that I could just work or something. It drives me nuts.
Probably better that way.
And it's been lousy weather. If it was nice, I could go out and like disc golf or something.
Anything. Yeah. Well, you could like mow or rake or like.
No, I don't do that. Nope. I did that enough when I was young. Those days are over.
You're punching out, huh? You're done.
I'm just. I should let my sons do it, but I don't trust them. I don't want them. They'll be missing toes. So
that's true. You got to watch them.
I got a couple more years before they're ready to do the landscaping.
You can turn them loose. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you want to help out the show, please, you can help us out by writing a review on iTunes or any of your podcatchers. Also, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can get an extra episode every week as well as access to the entire back catalog. You got to go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, click on the Elite tab and sign up. If you have a story of your own you'd like to share with me and Cam, you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Mary will read over those and forward them on to us. Or if you want to call the show, 817-945-3828. Hope everybody out there has a really good week, works hard, and gets everything you dream of. For Big Fizzy and Cam, we'll talk to you folks later.
Peace, y'all.